This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So in a sense here, we're comparing the experience of the young witnesses at the school, the middle school in Zimbabwe, with some of the things that Morgan Knudsen has studied in her exploration of paranormal events. Let's go on, Morgan.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I think the general mood or emotional center that we carry, I mean, we all know that it changes up and down depending on, you know, what's going on in our lives and things like that. But I've really found that there's such a deep correlation to what people are, how people are internalizing events, how they're carrying wounds or baggage or negative experiences, how they're framing those experiences, and then the phenomenon that they end up experiencing in their day-to-day world. So, for example, I find that the people who are having these really terrifying haunting experiences and reporting the same types of visions, just those horrible looking beings and things like that, are generally not dealing with, there's something going on with them emotionally, and it's almost like that emotion becomes a bit of a filter for what's going on, you know, outside of them, whether they're, you know, projecting a manifestation outward or whether this, you know, this, there's a living, breathing thing that's moving around. It seems to be very directly correlated with sort of the general energy and emotional state that they're kind of living in on a day-to-day basis. That's what I've found anyway.
And just hang on a second, because this is a perfect time, I think, for me to really connect you to on a common level. And that is, Morgan, your book, Teaching the Living, From Heartbreak to Happiness in a Haunted Home. Now, what you were just saying about the emotional energy and so on really resonated with me with respect to what, David, you had said in our past interviews about how you felt that your being drawn towards UFOs was a reflection of losing your dying mom.
Yes.
And I'm seeing that there's these same types of emotional energies that are involved. So maybe could you just tell Morgan about this experience in your own words, and then Morgan provide some feedback.
I became a ufologist at age 12, going on 13. And it was, as I've described somewhat earlier on this show, a sudden conversion. I read Gray Barker's book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, the centerpiece of which is the Three Men in Black. Barker was the creator of the myth of the Men in Black. The Three Men in Black who silence UFO investigators, who discover the horrible, dreadful, terrifying truth about the UFOs. Looking back on it, I find myself thinking, why did this book, which I think most people would say, this is just wild, this is just fantastic, why did it seem to me unquestionably true? And the answer for me was that I knew the Three Men in Black personally. That I grew up in a house, I was an only child, and my mother was slowly dying of a heart condition. That was our horrible secret, which we could not speak about. I didn't see UFOs, but I did develop the conviction of their reality, which may serve the same function.
That's fascinating. Yeah, and you know, I can so relate to that in many ways, because my earliest experiences that I can remember were back in when I was about the same age. And I think when we're carrying secrets like that, you know, and sort of the old cliche, which is, you know, you're only as sick as your secrets. I think there's
ooh, something. Ooh, that's beautiful.
You know?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I was just.
No, not at all. I think. Oh, thank you. Well, yeah, I think there's really so much weight to that statement. And, you know, when we carry this stuff into our daily experiences, I really do think when we don't deal with that with those emotions, it really does change who we are. And I know with, for me, I've had the experience of my father passing away. He died of cancer, and it was awful. It was years of a lot of heartache with for that and whatnot, which didn't come for me until far later. But, you know, I think whenever we're told that, you know, you're to suppress something or we're to bury it and we're not to process it, you know, how that comes forward and creates in our world, you know, it's like a wound that just doesn't stop bleeding. And we think that, okay, if that, you know, it's only isolated to this one thing, but when we're wounded, we bleed over everything. And yes. It bleeds into different, you know, areas of our experiences, and it taints how we're perceiving the world, taints what we're attracting, all of that.
My mind skitters off listening to you to a question that has often intrigued me, which is, why is it that in contemporary ufology, the central issue is not so much the UFOs up in the sky, but the supposed suppression of information relating to them? I mean, that whole business about disclosure and the messianic, I mean, when you call it AD after disclosure, I think it's fair to say that's messianic. And perhaps what you're saying gives me a clue that not just for me, but for the entire UFO culture, it is the secrecy and the suppression that is crucial.
Yeah, I think you could be onto something with that, because, I mean, the idea of suppression and whatnot as well, I think it sometimes gives people, if they know that information or they feel they know that information, it gives them a false, maybe like even a false sense of power or specialness that, yeah. You know, we have this information, but you don't have this information, but that's okay. You know, you'll get there eventually. And I think you're really onto something with that.
What I see here is a really interesting parallel in that on one hand, we can talk about UFOs, but they are a paranormal experience. And then, Morgan, we've got hauntings, which are also a paranormal experience. And what I'm seeing is a whole bunch of common themes in what you're saying, David, as well as what you're saying, Morgan, that come together to cause these two different and yet still similar types of phenomena, because they're both in the realm of the paranormal.
I mean, as a teen ufologist, I would have utterly rejected that we weren't dealing with stuff like ghosts. We were dealing with science. But you know, now looking back on it, especially as a professor of religion, I can say, yeah, it really is two paranormal phenomena.
Yeah, well, and I think, too, it depends on how you define paranormal, you know. I mean, I think we think of it as something that's super normal or, you know, out of the ordinary. And yet, even in the reports of hauntings and things like that, it's something like 75% of people have had one of these experiences, whether it be, you know, a UFO or what they think is a ghost or whatever it is. And, you know, it makes you wonder, like, is this something that is really indeed paranormal, or is this just, are we dealing with a human experience that again, we're back to that whole idea of suppression?
Yeah. I mean, as you may have picked up from the earlier part of the show, I take a fairly strictly, this is human projection.
Yeah. I agree.
With the caveat that I regard the human animal and the human mind as vastly more mysterious than we normally think of it. So when we say, oh, it's just human, do we really know what a human being is? I don't think I do.
I've met enough people over my life where I wonder just what the heck are they? Or what they think they are, because it is so complicated. So in a sense here, we have so many things that we can't understand. I wonder, listening to all this, if as much as we can theorize about a collective unconscious, is that something we could prove or demonstrate in any way? Got more to come with David and Morgan and Gene and Randall, a quartet. You're in
the Paracast.
Paracast. People, I'm Greg Carlwood, the host of the Higher Side Chats podcast, an uninterrupted and action-packed interview-based show where I talk to some of the brightest minds for our troubled times about all things paranormal, occult, esoteric, and conspiratorial. After 10 years, we've heard it all. Alien moon bases, archons, hollow earth, technocratic and biomedical agendas, magic, mind control, and Lovecraftian monsters. Oh my. Usually, the first hour of the show is free, and the second hour is for members who sign up for the Higher Side Chats Plus at $8 a month. But praise be, we're giving Paracast listeners 2 free weeks of Plus when you use the all caps coupon code PARACAST. Go to thehiresidechats.com, sign up with the code PARACAST, and dive into the nearly never-ending archive of great interviews I've been lucky enough to get over the years, from David Politis to David Icke, and many, many guests not named David. Check it out. You're going to love it. All right, Gene, was that good? Can we use that one?
Attention business owners body slammed by overwhelming debt. If your business is in trouble, hassled by creditors, if you're frustrated, finally fed up with big business bailouts while your business has been left for dead, please listen close. There's a brand new fast-track bankruptcy. Some have even called it the biggest small business bailout in American history. Designed for individuals and their businesses. And look, almost no one knows about this yet. My attorney wasn't even aware of it. The truth is, beating the system has never been easy because it's rigged in a sense against the little guy. But here's the jaw-dropping news nobody's talking about. They've literally just changed the system so that you can beat it. But only if you understand how the new game has to be played. Find out if you qualify at pocketsoflight.com. This government-backed small business repair program is still legal, but may not be renewed after the election. Fight back fairly, fight back ethically at pocketsoflight.com.
Anytime, any place, anywhere. Radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
You've seen crazy diets to lose weight? At GCN Team, our Healthy Body weight loss system simply neutrifies the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Now we have a quartet. We can set up a vocal group. Any of you play a musical instrument other than Randall?
Not me.
I sort of play piano a little bit, but I wouldn't go ranting about it.
Yeah, neither would I, so don't worry about that. I just try to make it sound like I wanted to at the time, but please, no requests.
Yeah.
Okay, well, this is really interesting because also, Morgan, what we found in talking with other people who are entity seekers like yourself or I know you don't like the term ghost hunter, but there is a high correlation between hauntings and UFO experiences. And now, talking with you, David, we're seeing that there is also this high correlation in the way we can look at both kinds of experiences coming from the same sort of psychological mind space, if there's a, you know, for the lack of a better term, or this collective unconscious. Morgan, are you familiar at all with Carl Jung's work?
Oh, yes, very much.
Okay, so there, I think you two have something in common to deal with. Do you think that perhaps maybe ghosts and UFOs are both coming out of that particular collective unconscious archetypal imagery?
Who wants to go first? I guess for me, I think there's definitely some underlying and overlapping causes with a lot of it. And I'm not massively into the UFO field like you are, David, so I'm probably ignorant on a bit of it. But I find that regardless of the experiences on the external, it still comes back to the people that are experiencing it. So when we're looking at, you know, all of this external phenomenon, ultimately we have to look at the observers. So I think just right there, we have a core commonality. The observers are the same. So, you know, we have to be able to take a look at that. And I think it begins to link everything together a little bit.
That's one of my watchwords, that the witness is a part of the sighting. Or I should say the vision. And the example that I gave in my book was that of John Lennon and May Pang together witnessing a UFO on a summer evening that had been of a day that had been hot and then had cooled off. And in their narrations of it, they keep harping on that they were naked. And, you know, if it was just that they were, happened to be in the place to see an extraterrestrial vehicle, why is their nakedness important? But to me, this is an archetypal scene of the naked couple standing before the numinous presence, the Lord God who comes to walk in the garden in the cool of the day and says, Adam, where art thou?
Yeah, but remember also that John Lennon was anything but religious. Don't know about May Pang.
Yeah, now that might be, okay, this is the psychoanalytic heads I win, tails you lose, right? That if he was religious, we could say, yeah, okay, no wonder he'd have a religious vision like Father Gill. But now I can say, well, the religious part of him was what he repressed, as in his song, Imagine, where he imagines there's no heaven, there's just the unenchanted sky. And then the unenchanted sky says to John Lennon, I am not so easily banished.
Yeah, wow. I just love this conversation. The other way we might look at this is if we're looking at that kind of imagery, and David, this is something that actually you've brought up in past interviews, is that there's this sort of von Danikenitis, or this view that all of the ancient sightings or descriptions in biblical times were just mistaken.
Yeah.
For some sort of a craft, a material craft, nuts and bolts craft, but that really does a disservice to the way that they looked at things in those days from their mindset in the period at the time. So let's say we go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, where we have this imagery of the two, you know, Adam and Eve before God. Well, Adam and Eve weren't religious. To them, that was just their life. They were just experiencing it. There was no religion for them, right?
I don't know. I guess the key to my comparison is the sense of the numinosity of that presence.
Well, like, and religion came way later. Like, we know that, right? Like, in the story, if you can imagine yourself being there at the time, it's just like, this is your life, and this is, like, you're this being that takes care of you until it got upset because, you know, you ate from the knowledge of tree and of good and evil, you know, so it's... Do you get what I'm saying, right? To them, there had been no religion. There was no church. There was no bow down and pray because of all of the things that were purportedly God did. I don't know that God ever gave the lecture to Adam and Eve that he created the heavens and the earth. You know, we get that before Adam and Eve came along. I don't know how they got to know it.
But remember that Adam and Eve never existed, that they are mythic projections of people who live in a world where there is religion. And as myth, the story has it makes its truth claim. And that's why we never forget it any more than you are ever going to forget the gingerbread house in the woods.
How do we tie this back to where we were before, though? Like, we were talking about John Lennon, May Pang, religious iconography, and saying, okay, well, you know, so John Lennon wasn't religious, but in the symbolism, they don't have to be.
Yeah, that this is something archetypal that crops up in out of the unconscious of the storyteller in Genesis, who gives it in its full ambiguity its enduring power, and it also crops up in the lives of these two would-be secular people.
Apropos of nothing, I should mention here that's widely assumed that the song Imagine, the lyrics were mostly written by Yoko Ono, to which he adapted and put music to it.
That is interesting. That Randall, was it you who suggested that, I remember on one show I was being interviewed, that it seemed to me we had that trio of Adam and Eve before the numinous equals John Lennon and May Pang before the UFO, and the fourth is the snake and Yoko Ono. Was it you who made that comparison?
I know everybody was on Yoko.
Well, everybody is trying to really, really give Yoko
I'm guilty.
A bad rap, and I think that Julian Lennon had things to say about that. We've got Morgan and David and Gene and Randall, you're in.
The Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. danpilla.com.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
As the United States passed 12 million coronavirus cases this week, there has been some good news in the fight against COVID-19. An antibody treatment from Regeneron has been granted an emergency use approval from the FDA. And Pfizer applied for emergency approval with the FDA after data from the Stage 3 trial of their vaccine showed it to be 95% effective in preventing infection. With the news that a vaccine could be right around the corner, many are asking what the administration's plans are for distributing it. White House Deputy Press Secretary Brian Morgenstern told Fox News that their plan would make sure that the most vulnerable Americans are able to be vaccinated first.
Those in nursing homes, long-term care facilities over a certain age with comorbidities, that's how we'll distribute it to make sure that those Americans who have the highest risks are vaccinated vaccinated fastest so that we can reduce their level of anxiety, reduce their level of risk, so that we can get back to normal life really as fast as possible.
This is USA Radio News. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar says a coronavirus vaccine could be ready for distribution days after it gets approval from the FDA. Tim Berg has the details from the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau.
The nation's first coronavirus vaccine is set to go before the FDA on December 10th. That's when an advisory board will meet to consider Pfizer's request for emergency approval. The company reports the vaccine is 95% effective. Regarding the timing of things, Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar.
Within weeks, we could have a decision from FDA, and within 24 hours of that, we will have started distributing millions of doses of safe and effective vaccine to begin protecting our most vulnerable across America.
The Texas National Guard has been deployed to El Paso to assist with morgue operations as that city's hospitals near full capacity. There are currently more than 300 COVID patients in El Paso's intensive care units, and hospitals have brought in 10 temporary morgue trailers to deal with the spike in deaths. This is USA Radio News.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea helps build the red corpuscles in the blood which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A.com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
So isn't it strange how in talking about the phenomenon, the James Fox movie, we refer to the Zimbabwe sighting involving middle school children, and end up with biblical phenomena, and then with John Lennon and May Pang, and maybe even Yoko Ono. But getting back to the phenomenon, because we have only like a couple of seconds left, and I wanted to really hit this four square. There was a third sighting you wrote about. David, yes. Would you want to bring that one up?
Westall High School in Melbourne, Australia. And although I say high school, apparently Australian high schools at the time extended down to what we would call the middle grade. Do you mind if I digress to ask Morgan a question here?
Sure.
Which is, Morgan, do you find that the sightings of ghosts and spirits are distributed over different age groups of children? Or is it primarily those on the cusp of puberty? And from my question, you know what answer I'm hinting at.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny because usually there seems to be a pretty broad range. But where the difference is that the reports of, say, for example, like poltergeist or psychokinetic activity typically hits in the puberty range. So the kids as young as, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years old are reporting, or parents and whatnot are reporting that their kids are seeing things and the kids are saying different things and whatnot. You know, and lots of reports, from the younger age groups, in regards to things like, reincarnation and stuff like that. So, researchers like Ian Stevenson, they date, you know, kids back quite young. Yeah, as soon as you get into the puberty range, that's when people start reporting the sort of the psychokinetic movement of objects. Kids are able to move their physical reality around and things like that.
Because, I mean, I'm struck that at Ariel, it seems to have been the older kids who had the experiences. The younger kids didn't see anything or notice anything. In Westall, it also seems to have been the older kids, the kids just on the verge of puberty. Okay, what happened at Westall? First of all, there was a sighting of some sort of a grayish, silvery object in the sky. The science teacher, Andrew Greenwood, who saw it and was interviewed a little over a year afterwards, says that it was there, but he didn't notice it at first until the kids pointed it out to him. But once it was pointed out, it was impossible not to see it. Hundreds of kids and the science teacher saw it from the grounds of the school. Then it seemed to go down in what was called the Grange, a grove of pine trees off the school yard, the school ground, separated from the school by a number of private gardens. Was it kitchen gardens, I think you call them. And that it seemed to go down amid the pine trees, at which point the students jumped the fence, or large numbers of them, ran after where they thought the object had gone down, and apparently not long afterwards told stories about how they'd seen it on the ground. I say apparently because we know this from the recollections of Greenwood, which are not always unimpeachable, and from the memories of the kids long afterwards, that Shane Ryan, who did a fantastically great job investigating them, and he's the hero of a wonderful movie, Westall 66. And here it seems to me that the question of the transformation of experience in these people's memories is important. Unlike at Ariel, you do not have contemporary videos of the kids being interviewed. So there's an important piece missing. But what has struck me is the parallel between Westall and Ariel. In both cases, there is a landing in a wild and, I will go so far as to say, forbidden area off the school grounds. In the one case, Westall, the kids jump the boundary. In the other case, Ariel, the kids observe the boundary. And the aliens do too. They don't impinge on the school grounds, but they and the kids face each other across the boundary. And I think that some similar factors are operating in both. I found in drawings done long after the fact by the Westall kids, there are some that seem to me powerfully sexual. And Shane Ryan in Westall 66 remarks, and I've made so much out of his remark that he probably regrets having made it, that the Grange was a place for illicit smoking and steamy liaisons. And one of the teachers who was there at the time, who is quite sure there was no UFO landing, has written that the real story of Westall is that this was a migrant community whose people, whose kids made often very great successes of themselves in Australian society, and that the UFO gave them a common tradition, a common story, which to me fits into this pattern that I think I can detect running from Boyanai and the Father Gill sightings down to Ariel.
Well, then we're saying that they unconsciously did this?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
There was an interview that James Fox managed to get with the science teacher who finally came out. He was approached by some military people. He says, you will not talk about this or you will lose all of your pension. You'll never get a job again. Finally, he came forward and said that he, too, had seen the craft. And being a science teacher, it was like nothing that he could explain in terms of his knowledge of science. On top of all the other people that saw it. I mean, I love the symbolism. I love this way of looking at it that you've got. There's something to it because it maps onto it in a way that is indisputable. And yet, I can't help but think there really is something to it. Just like Morgan, I think maybe you think that in terms of afterlives, there really is some sort of an entity in an afterlife in many cases. And yet all of these same things that David are talking about map onto those experiences. And indeed, if we're talking about the sexual aspects of hauntings, we can also talk about the sexual aspects of abductions. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Both of them have. So maybe let's look at that a little bit. What's a succubus if that's not a type of haunting, almost like of an alien being?
Randall, may I respond to the thing about Greenwood, the science teacher? Because the story he told in The Phenomenon, he told a very similar story to Shane Ryan, but didn't insist on anonymity. I don't know why he suddenly decided he wanted to be anonymous. But he was interviewed a little over a year after the event, in December of 1967, by the American physicist and UFO researcher James McDonald, and he did not breathe a word about that story of being visited by officials and threatened, even though McDonald, coming straight from the NICAP, Gene Weller remembers NICAP, the NICAP business about Air Force suppression, McDonald kept saying to him, he kept hinting he should be saying something about official suppression. He did not say a word. And I am convinced that the threats that were made to him were indeed made, but not by any officials, but by the headmaster of the school, who was violently, fanatically opposed to the whole idea of UFOs.
We got one more segment to spend with Dave Halpern, and then Morgan Knudsen will be hanging around also for After the Paracast. With Gene and Randall, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNloans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNloans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNloans.com. That's GCNloans.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Hi, my name is Lily. My mom and dad used to fight about money all the time. Then one day, I heard them talking about this guy, some uncle I never knew, called Uncle Sam. Well, they say this Uncle Sam guy wanted them to pay him like a gazillion dollars, and they didn't have a gazillion dollars. So they called this company they heard on the radio called the Tax Doctor. And the Tax Doctor worked with Uncle Sam's people. I think they're called the IRS. and they were able to work it out so my mom and dad didn't have to pay Uncle Sam very much money at all. So now mom and dad are happy, and I'm happy too. Thanks, Tax Doctor.
If you owe $10,000 or more to the IRS or state, call now and pay less.
800-215-1727. 800-215-1727. That's 800-215-1727.
There's so much hand sanitizer on the market, but beware. Not all hand sanitizers are created equal. That's why you want to use 2020 Safe Hand Sanitizer. You can trust the hand sanitizer on 2020safe.net to be made with the highest quality ingredients. American made with American ingredients employing Americans. Log on now to 2020safe.net and order your 1 liter today. Normally $29.99, but reduced to $19.99. So hurry while supplies last and receive a bonus. That's right. You'll receive a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster, a $39.95 value, free, by using code GCN at checkout. Right now, click 2020safe.net. That's 2020safe.net to get our 1 liter bottle of high-quality hand sanitizer with your free bonus, a 30-count bottle of Immune Booster valued at $39.95. Remember to enter GCN at checkout, and the bonus is yours, free, 2020safe.net.
Hi, my name is Richard Dolan. You're listening to the Paracast.
So David Halperin, you're saying it was the headmaster who gave the warning, not Men in Black or government agents.
Not Men in Black, not government agents. The only government agents who visited the school, and this is Greenwood told McDonald, were two RAAF officers who came to the school to look into the sighting. They were treated with raw hostility by the headmaster, who basically told them, this is all nonsense, go away. And they went away, I suspect, relieved to be able to cross one more item off their to-do list. And that was it.
So how come things changed? Instead of the headmaster, it was government agents. How did that change and why?
I don't know why he changed it. My sense is that what the headmaster did to him was so vicious and so humiliating, which is to say that, and he talks about this, sort of mumbles about this to McDonald, that the headmaster said in front of an assembly of the entire school that Greenwood was having a hangover. Which to me is just extraordinary behavior, and it would make sense to me that he found it so utterly humiliating that he transferred it outside.
It would make a lot of sense, too, because when you look at even in regards to haunting phenomenon and things like that, the level of shame that can be pressed onto people about these incidents, you know, whether or not they actually saw them or, you know, whatever happened, I think shame and the underbelly of that shame, which can be so ugly, can start to reshape people's stories and people's perceptions about what happened too.
That seems to me absolutely clear in the case of Greenwood. There are other aspects of where memories have trends in connection with Westall, where memories, you can trace their transformation over the years.
Now, as I said, I'm sure that James Fox was quite sincere in including well-known UFO cases to depict in the movie The Phenomenon. He's a movie director and producer. He's not a UFO investigator. The question is here is, some things like this are way out of space as far as people like that are concerned, like most UFO researchers are concerned. So would you agree with me, David Halperin, that Fox was perfectly sincere in assuming these basically buttressed his case about possible visitors from outer space?
I've seen no reason to question his sincerity, and I believe he has proved two things. One is that there are some genuinely baffling cases, and the other is that the tinfoil hat stereotype of the UFO believer is not only false, but libelous.
Now, it's certainly true here that a movie like The Phenomenon is not meant for you. It's not meant for me. It's not meant for Randall. We're old hands at this thing, probably not meant for Morgan either, but meant for the general public, totally or only partly familiar with the subject, maybe totally unfamiliar with the ins and the outs, and this is a way to present it all to them. Yep. To say this all needs more investigation, which is certainly true. We need to understand what happened here. And certainly if the three episodes we talked about here are not representative of spaceships, they still are events, strange events, unusual events that we need to understand. And whether or not they relate to the entire UFO mystery is another story entirely.
Now, Gene and Randall, Randall's remark about the abductions, the sexual elements of the abductions, and the comparison of the myths of the succubi and the incubi lead me to a point I did not make in my review, but I want to raise here, and I don't know if we have any time to talk about it.
We have maybe 3-4 minutes.
Okay, I will say it very quickly. The movie absolutely ignores UFO abductions. Bud Hopkins and Whitley Strieber might never have existed if you watch The Phenomenon. And I think this is a point that at least deserves remark.
I have a feeling he might have assumed they were too extreme to get into.
Well, to be fair, John Mack was featured fairly prominently.
Sure.
Yeah, but no hint that he's an abduction researcher.
That is true. That is true. I mean, but those who know, that's what he did, right?
Yes.
But that is kind of the feeling I have here, that there were certain efforts to be politically correct. You get into Roswell briefly, you get into these cases, but as soon as you start talking about Barney and Betty Hill and Communion and Hickson and Parker and Travis Walton, that's worth another movie.
Oh, indeed. And next time you're on, David, we got to get into Hickson and Parker, because there is a whole other case where we can apply a whole other layer upon layer of symbolism again.
Oh, can't we do that? We can do it. We can do it in grand style.
There's one thing, too, we can do. David, I don't know if he'd be willing, but he's been on the show twice, and I've had some friendly exchanges with him. See if Calvin Parker would like to come on again and talk about it. Maybe then these are things you can ask him directly.
Okay, boy, that is a challenge.
I wonder if he'd be up to it or not, because, again, you're not saying the guy made it up. You're saying there was a legitimate explanation for something that really happened to them.
An explanation which I haven't really found.
So what's your take about UFO abductions, Morgan?
I find it really fascinating because is how it can be culturally centered. The description of these aliens that are doing the abductions tend to be culturally centered. So in the West, we have the Greys. South America, we tend to have the more animal-looking entities and things like that. So I definitely think everything that we've been talking about here absolutely applies to these abduction instances. And, you know, in relationship to the hauntings, what comes up for me is the Doris Blither case in Culver City, California, where it was investigated by Dr. Barry Taff and Carrie Gaynor. She had come to them saying that she was basically being attacked and raped by this entity that was coming into her room and coming into the house at night and things like that. And what was interesting about that case was that when Dr. Barry Taff got into it, he discovered that she had this very questionable relationship with her kids. And the older son and the other two, I believe there was three sons. And what was interesting was that the number of entities that she claimed were abusing her were the same as the number of kids that she had in the house and things like this. She was an alcoholic at the time. There was a lot going on with her psychologically, but it was interesting how these two things began to overlap again. I think everything that we've talked about completely overlaps with hauntings. And I think the abduction phenomenon needs to be continually researched.
David Halperin, tell our listeners, please, where they can find more of your stuff. And that will include those blogs we were talking about on the show.
My website is www.davidhalperin.com. Halperin, one word, and Halperin is H-A-L as in Leon, P as in Peter, E-R-I-N as in Nova Scotia, .net. And, of course, my book, Intimate Alien, The Hidden Story of the UFO.
Morgan, where do we find your stuff?
You can find me at entityseeker.ca. And then, of course, Facebook is under Entity Seeker as well. All one word, no S on the end. And you can find me there, including all my videos and my weekly live stream, which is Spiritual Healthcare. And that's on both Facebook and YouTube.
You can find us on Twitter. Look for the Paracast. Look for the Paracast on Facebook. Look for branded Paracast merchandise at theparacast.shop. That's theparacast.shop. The throw pillows, the t-shirts, all that. Look for the Paracast Plus, where Morgan will continue our discussion with us as part of your membership for after the Paracast, part of your membership with the Paracast Plus. And to subscribe, check out theparacast.plus, theparacast.plus. For a long-term subscription, we'll give you a free coupon code for The Phenomenon, the James Fox UFO documentary with 3 extra hours of material, theparacast.plus. David Halperin, thank you for joining us.
And thank you both so much for having me.
Morgan, thank you for joining us, too.
Thank you, guys.
Featuring Gene Steinberg is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.